Welcome to the High and Low Podcast. I am your host, Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo. Still a little sick, but still kicking. I'm not a fan of the early spring. I feel like everybody always gets colds and things seem like they're going to be really optimistic. You're like, I'm going to make a New Year's resolution. I'm going to go to bed at a good time. I'm going to wake up at a good time. I'm going to expose myself to natural light. I'm going to work out. And then reality hits. Your small child brings home sicknesses from school and you're just struggling to get by. And the weather's getting warmer and the birds are chirping and you feel terrible. That's been my experience anyway, but I hope you all are doing great. Today, we're going to recap part two, the second half of the Erika Jayne documentary, Bet It All on Blonde. And I was right. It was meant to be a two-parter because I went to Bravo's website and I was like, this is so odd because the way it's cut, it really does feel like they just lumped together two parts that were supposed to be independent. And on Bravo's website, they have like part one and part two. And the description of the show says it will be airing in two parts in blah, blah, blah months. And I'm like, well, something changed. And they just dumped them after an episode of a reunion. Interesting. Disclaimer, there will be some paraphrasing. This is my opinion. I'm describing the show to you through my own thoughts and rememberings and viewpoint. Now, if you recall from part one, when we left off, the stakes were high for Erika. In her bubble world, the stakes were high for Mikey, for Leia, for the manager. The show is going to happen soon. They didn't get the extra $100,000 of funding, but hold on. I've heard word on the streets was that she got that $100,000 from her mother. Someone has said that to me. It's a rumor. I have no receipts. There's no way to have receipts on that one, but it's someone that has had quality information for me in the past. And it makes sense. If she really felt like she needed that money, where else would you go? In the grand tradition of Bravo celebrities, Sandoval, Jen Shaw, you go to your mother. And her mother is in part two quite a bit. And I'm sure she would have come to the show either way. But if she did lend her the $100,000 she needed to have like live percussionists and all the other things she wanted, then, you know, I hope her mother was happy with the show. And how could she not be? A mother's love, right? A la Candy Burris. So part two opens with them getting to Vegas. They're there. They're waving to the Mandalay Bay sign, the digital sign that, you know, when it scrolls, one of the things that you see is a poster of Erika Jayne in her full regalia for advertising for her show. And she's in the cab or whatever from the airport. She's like, that's me. Oh, look, there we are. We've made it, you all. Waving to her sign. It was very reminiscent of Countess Luann staring at her own sign and being like,
Glamorous. We're doing it real big.
And it says that the show runs from August 30th through December 16th. And I still don't understand why she didn't do a show during BravoCon. You know, like that's your bread and butter. That's the people out of all the people in the world. These are the people who are aware that you exist and are aware that you have a show. And she was involved in BravoCon and did the Pat the Puss session with Mikey. That's on my recap of BravoCon somewhere. And, you know, she did her panels. I think she did two panels besides that. But I will never understand why she didn't do a show during BravoCon and pull from that audience. Maybe Bravo was like, we don't want you to do one because we don't want you to compete with anyone. But come on. Would that many people have gone? I don't think so, but she would have gotten some ticket sales. So that's an enigma to me. So she gets to Mandalay Bay and she's got, you know, a suite or something. I'm sure it looks like a very nice room and they're all set up nicely. She's in bed and she's talking to the camera because she has these confessional moments just sort of spliced throughout where she'll have candid conversations with the producer or just the camera. So it's a little bit like The Office. Like she'll turn and talk to the camera occasionally. And she's in bed and she says,
I don't care how bad I look. I don't care about budgets. I don't care about whatever. This show is a true joy to do. I don't care how many mountains I've had to climb. I don't care. It is a true joy. And I can be dead tired on my feet every day if this is what I get to do, because it's so much better than anything else.
So first day there, emotions are high. Endorphins are pumping. People are excited. The glass is half full. Black screen, white letters, 3 days until show. Then everybody's getting all glammed up in their Vegas best. Crazy shoes, bodycon dresses, shiny shirts. And her dancers and Mikey are all going to have dinner in a private room at Mandalay Bay. I don't remember what restaurant it was. It doesn't matter. They feel very important and very special. And they get into the private room and Erica says, "We made it to Vegas! Woo!" And everyone cheers. Her backup dancers are sitting on either side of her. Mikey is directly across from her. And Mikey says to everyone, "Did you see the billboard on the side of Mandalay Bay? I'll put it in the performer's chat." He starts typing on his phone. And so they have some, you know, chat chain with all of them. And Erica mentions,
"It's my mom's birthday and we should do something for her. I texted her and I said, 'What do you want to do?' And she said, 'Nothing, of course.'"
Maybe she can't do much because she just gave someone $100,000. And one of the dancers asked her if she's coming to the show on Friday.
"Friday is Saturday, honey. She reminded me I was your first director, producer, hair and makeup artist."
People ask her if she was a stage mom. And Erica says,
"Well, you know, in my opinion, she lived vicariously through me, which is great, but also like,
And makes a face. A backup singer says, "She acts like she has the right to tell you." And Erica jumps in,
"Yeah, like, I don't like that or I don't like this. Well, we don't care."
To which I say, if she truly did invest $100,000, give her a producer credit and she would have a say. But who knows? That may not have happened. And you would think, you know, that really did send me into a weird place watching her struggle for $100,000. I'm pretty sure she still owns things worth that much money if she were to sell them, whether it's extremely luxury designer goods or, you know, more jewelry. There's a lot of jewelry. I don't know if she's turned it all over or not. I doubt it. But we get another black screen, and on the screen is written, "Child performer."
"I've always been the kid that wanted to jump out from the closet and do a show. I would go, 'I need my entrance.' And my mom would announce me, and I would jump out and I would dance. I did children's theater, and I never stopped."
Then they show a ton of old photos of Erica from when she was a child doing performances. They're very old school, look like they're vaudeville photos.
"Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling. Hello, my ragtime gal."
That's the vibe. It's a lot. You know what? But I think that's where the seed got planted for a lot of sparkle and fringe, because it was the, I don't know, either 70s probably. And she's got just like ton of sequins along the edges of little kids costumes and tap things. And she's hamming it up for the camera, you know, and she's laying it on thick that this has been her life's purpose and her life's journey.
"Years of training, years of voice.
Oh, fail well.
Years of dance."
And then she's reminiscing. And this is where she and Tom are very similar, right? And she's like,
"Even going back to kindergarten, you know, the Christmas show, I wanted the lead. I watched. And the lead girl, she wasn't doing a good job. So I walked up to the teacher and I said, 'I'm sorry, but I can do a better job than her.' And you know what? I did. I got the part. And she was relegated to be an elf. And I kicked ass."
Little kindergarten, All About Eve. Such a fitting story for Erica Jane. And All About Eve is an old movie, a Hollywood classic that I highly recommend. It's riveting. It's like a good episode of Real Housewives. It'll get your blood boiling. It's women-centered, you know, so just for that reason alone, give it a watch. And the kicker is that this great story that focuses on women was, of course, written by a woman named Mary Orr, and it was based on a short story called The Wisdom of Eve. And two men made the movie, the producer and director. They did not give Mary Orr a screen credit. So I'm not even going to say their names, but thanks, Mary Orr, for a great story. All About Eve, check it out. I think it's one of Bette Davis's best movies. Back to Erica. Then she starts bemoaning her problems and saying,
"The last few years have eaten away at everything that I have on a human level. After the creativity, how about your sanity?"
So bemoaning the fact that she has not gotten to be creative over the past 3 years. She's just been trying to stay sane. And for Mikey and for Erica, this entire endeavor is kind of torturous, because what they're doing is they keep looking back at the Erica Jane persona that she established a decade ago. And they keep comparing her now to that then. And to me, it's really toxic, but it's the entire theme of the show, of this documentary, of their mental status for like, when will she be good again? She'll be good when she was as good as she was 10 years ago, when she has that same, you know, attitude and devil may care, if she can look the same, if she can sound the same, if she can have that same swagger. It's like, y'all, it's a decade later. She's been through stuff. She doesn't have the carefree attitude because back then she could really do whatever she wanted. Her husband ran Los Angeles. There were no repercussions for his actions, let alone anything she was going to get into. She could spend whatever she wanted to spend without even needing to think about it. So that kind of spoiled brat attitude has no chance of coming back unless she full on goes delusional on stage, which is a possibility. But even as I'm watching it, it feels very toxic to me. And I'm thinking, I thought it was dumb when I first heard that she was going to come back and try to do this show again. I'm like, not too much has changed. You can't go back and play that same card, that same song over and over.
It takes out that to baby.
Has a totally different feel to it, knowing what everybody knows now. How many F's do I give? Yeah, you've been given that attitude since we found out about the widows and orphans. It's not fun. Doesn't make me want to jump around and sing. It makes me real sad. Makes me quite depressed to think about it. But we're not talking about a real like songwriter here, okay? That's not Erika Jayne. So she keeps talking about how she's an artist and she's creative. To my knowledge, she does not write her songs. She does not pick what she wears like Mikey does that. Other people write her music. Other people figure out how she's going to dance around, gyrate on the stage. So I don't really know what creativity she brings to this whole process besides a thumbs up, thumbs down when people bring her options of things and their vision. But she's going off and she's saying that making this show has been tough. And she's like,
hold on, Erika, you know who you are. And that you have to remember the absolute sheer rebellious nature. Where's the ballsy, confident, over-the-top character? Where is she living right now? She's still here. She's damaged. She's beat down, but she's still here. I just gotta resurrect her.
And as she's talking, they're showing tons of photos of her from 10 years ago when she was on stage as Erika Jayne, giving her pouty faces, you know, throwing the money, the whole thing. And there's a saying, you can't go home again. There's also a book, I think it's by Thomas Wolfe. Anyway, it's just this belief that like whatever you've experienced in the time period and the person that you are in that moment experiencing it will never be able to be duplicated. And trying to do so is just an act of futility. And that's how I felt watching this documentary. This ego-driven, emotionally immature, really a fool's errand of trying to recreate what this person was before all of this. I mean, this is a very big deal. For I will say it again. This is the largest embezzlement scandal that the state of California has ever seen. This rocked the California Bar Association. This man never should have been practicing law. And this is all just beginning to unfold. We are at layer one of the exterior of the onion. There's going to be so many layers to this. He didn't do this alone. And she, whether she likes it or not, is the face of it. Her trying to show her booty on Instagram and say terrible things and only care about myself on the show, that doesn't go away. We can't pretend that didn't happen. She refused to give the earrings back, even though it was proven they came from client funds. She keeps saying on the show they didn't come from client funds. She's carrying all of that now like a giant backpack. And throughout the documentary, she's like psychologically having a hard time being carefree on stage. And, you know, Mikey's having his breakdowns about it. But there's more breakdowns to come. But to me, watching it, it's just so foolish for them to be trying to recreate the exact show she did before all of this hit. They cut back to the restaurant where everybody is sitting, and I guess they've already eaten or whatever. And Mikey's like, I can't believe we're here. And then he's holding up a drink or whatever to give a toast. And I'm like, shouldn't it be Erika giving a toast? It's her face on the thing. And then I'm like, oh, she's just like Mikey's paper doll. Like, this is really Mikey's show. It's Mikey's vision. It's everything is, it really feels like this is Mikey. And she's the avatar through which Mikey makes a show. And he says, thank you, everyone, for being here. Oh, I love you all so much. Let's just work for the next few days. Just work with me. We're going to make this as close to perfect as possible. And Erika, in a confessional to the cameras,
Mikey and I have worked together for so long. I could never have done this without him.
I'm like, yeah, that's obvious. What I have learned watching this is that this is Mikey's thing. Mikey is calling all the shots here. And back at the dinner, Erika holds up her little champagne flute and she's like,
I propose a toast to Mikey. Honey, you know I love you and I'm not going to make you cry, but here's to you.
And Mikey yells, I love you all. And they all clap for Mikey. The next scene, we see Erika Jayne walking, strutting through a casino in a branded hoodie. We see on the screen, 2 days until the show. She's walking into the Hard Rock Cafe's performance area to go do a rehearsal on the actual stage. And Mikey, per usual, welcomes her with,
Erica Jane, we made it. Rock star. Incredible.
Just hype man on the payroll. You know, I wonder, would that be useful? It would be very interesting to like pay one of your friends to just wake you up in the morning and be like, hey, rock star, we're really going to kill this day, aren't we?
And you'd be like, yeah, we are. I mean, I think that'd just be useful productivity wise.
And is that how famous people operate? You know, because they always have a clique around them. I don't know. Is that step one to like losing touch with reality? Probably.
Erica is on the stage and she poses in front of the House of Blues. Did I say House of Rock? I don't even care anymore.
House of Blues logo. And the lady who is the dance team lead, Jamie Ruiz, snaps a photo. Mikey is back sitting in a little two-top with a microphone. And this reminds me so much of Burlesque. Like, he is the Stanley Tucci character back there just barking things through a microphone as people are gyrating on the stage. I did not equate Mikey with Cher because he could never and would never. Stanley Tucci is already a stretch. No one is even close in the arena, in the orbit of Cher here. So Mikey's yelling into his microphone, 1, 2, 3.
As Erica Jane and her backup dancers slowly go through the counts to One Hot Pleasure, which is apparently another one of her songs. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Mikey's watching them and he is not happy. He makes a sour face. I don't like that. Erica and the dancers are trying even harder for Mikey. They're gyrating harder. They're thrusting their hips harder off of the sides of this round circular bed. And Mikey yells out, someone's eating your pussy. And it was at this point that I really started to question my life choices. Like, why am I watching this? How did I get here? My mother grew up in the deep south and took an un-air-conditioned bus to work and lived in a house with no air conditioning so that I could be in my basement watching this man yell at these women to pretend like someone's eating their pussy. And then recap it. So I just made a mental note that I need to contribute something to my community this week because that put me in such a weird place. Watching these horribly self-involved people in their lewd, crude ways, it really shook something inside of me. But the women are trying even harder for Mikey now. They're arching their backs. They're moaning, writhing around on the bed. And Mikey is yelling into his microphone from his table saying, I need you to have a visual in your head. I need to believe you.
Sir, what kind of kink is this exactly? This has been going on for just a little bit too long, and they're trying so hard, and they're thrusting their cooches up to the sky, and they're moaning, and they're arching their backs. And Mikey says,
for some reason, it's just not clicking up there.
I started to ask myself, what does Mikey think happens when someone is going down on a woman? Like, does Mikey think that the woman is like writhing around? Because it's more like freeze tag. I do an impersonation of a pointer dog who has spotted a bird. I am frozen. I'm frozen in that position, as I think every woman is, because you hold it. Gotta hold that, because any change, you start writhing, you're gonna lose it. You gotta hold on to that lightning in a bottle for a second. So I don't know what Mikey is thinking goes on. Like, where he's imagining a lot of movement, I feel like the reality is just sort of a dead frog. But who knows what porn Mikey's watching, because he's got a vision in his mind and he wants them to recreate it. And it's not happening to his satisfaction. So Jamie Ruiz gets up and she gets up there and she acts out how she thinks Erica can be doing this better. And where the dancers and Erica were kind of just going through it like 1 and 2 and 3. And, you know, Jamie gets up there and she's in full showman mode. She's like, and she's throwing herself around and Erica taps her on the leg. And she says, it's rehearsal. And that made me laugh very hard because she's like, tone it down. And I'm like, hey, say that to Mikey. Like, Mikey's the one that has all of the ladies in the room spun up. Like, somebody needs to get out there and win an Oscar for a performance of being eaten out, essentially. He wants them to channel Meg Ryan in the diner in When Harry Met Sally, but on a bed. But Mikey's still, he's still very fed up with this. He's like, okay, number one, I want it synchronized. Number two, take more time caressing your body.
And Erica says, slow and slutty. Slow and slutty.
I wish we had more time to work out everything. It's obvious I don't know the show yet, but before I can kill it, I need to commit it to memory.
Mikey has them start from the top. And I don't even remember what the song was, but the opening, if you play this opening to me, it's going to send me into a very weird trance and make me want to fight because I've had to hear this opening to this song so many times as he had them start over. And it's like, so again, we hear that. And Mikey's like, can we not have her do the head roll? That wasn't hot. Everyone's doing something completely different. I know we can do this. And Erica says in a confessional,
it's hard to be the girl that's uninhibited now. I'm questioning who I am on a base level.
Back to Mikey yelling, it's not quite tight, which we can't do. We've got to make it hot. We're running out of time. Then whoosh, we get the logo too. Bravo's Bet It All on Blonde. So that was all just to ratchet up this false sense of stress and urgency for the viewer. This is the pinnacle, the crux, the climax of the show, pun intended. Black screen, 40 hours till show. Now they're in Erica Jane's suite after that rehearsal, and Mikey says, if we can't get the bed right, let's take it out. No offense. And Erica says,
challenge accepted.
Whore it out. Take this hour while I go do all the things. Work on it. So while Mikey goes to run errands and do chores of whatever he has to do, Erica's task is to writhe around on her hotel room bed with Jamie Ruiz and really pretend and channel as if someone is going down on her and the performance that she's going to do on the bed. First, there's a lengthy debate as to where she should put her hand when she thrusts her hips up. Should it be on her crotch? Should it be next to her leg on the bed? And they all decide, crotch. Jamie says, on your vagina. Jamie, it's the mons pubis. It's your body. You should know it. Erica proceeds to thrust and thrust and thrust on her bed. She's on her knees, so she's kind of like popping up and going back down, you know? And I say to myself, is it too late to go to law school? You know, a lot of people have dreams of when they win the lottery, what they would do. I think I would do like pass or fail at some great universities. It would be fun to get your law degree if it wasn't associated with crippling debt. Jamie's saying from the other side of the hotel room,
bouncy, sexy, hot.
Erica Jane is thrusting and bouncing and coming up and down from these squats on her bed. And I say to myself, I could grow flowers. There's money in that and it seems peaceful. But again, it's the customer interface. You know, I'd go to a farmer's market and they'd be like, I want the purple ones. I'd be like, I'm so sorry, we're out of the purple ones. And they would be a whole thing. So pass on that. Jamie has to take things into her own hands now. And she says, watch me. And she gets down on the ground and she begins to thrust and bounce slowly and then faster. Erica begins to chant in her mind so that she can remember this.
Vagina, bounce, bounce, bounce. Vagina, bounce, bounce, bounce.
In a confessional, Erica says,
I love Jamie because she'll tell me this looks like shit. Like, hello, help me be me for 5 minutes.
Then there's a discussion on exactly how to straddle. And the documentary shows footage from the Painkiller video, which you'll remember they showed that video on Beverly Hills years ago. It's the one that's shot in black and white, where she's writhing around on a bed in like a white kind of bathing suit looking jumpsuit.
I look at that Painkiller video and I'm like, was that really me? I used to be able to access her, but now it's hard.
Jamie keeps telling Erica to be sexy.
I'd be lying if I said I felt sexy.
Because nothing makes you feel sexy than knowing that you have a legal battle in front of you that's probably going to last a solid decade. And even with the knowledge that she has and the level of acceptance that she does, she still, in my opinion, is lying to herself as much as she is lying to others. I don't think that she can really accept how corrupt Tom was, what a crook he was, how long it was going on for. If she cannot admit to the world and herself that the earrings were bought with client funds, then she still is delusional. She's just come down a few pegs from the absolute delusion where the, you know, the character of Erica Jane was created and lived. Black screen, 29 hours till the show. Erica's eating a donut.
This is not Krispy Kreme.
The producer who's filming, I actually don't know how many people there are. I don't know if it's the same person talking to her, is holding the camera, or if there's two people, but regardless, producer off camera says to her, I have to bring something up. There was a hearing today about Tom.
It's about Tom.
And this is the hearing about his cognitive decline that the judge didn't give a decision on that right away. This is I think it was 2 or 3 days where people presented evidence from, you know, defending him and then also saying, no, he's malingering. So Erica is being kept up to date about that process while she's working on rehearsals for her show.
I have such fucking PTSD from shit popping out of nowhere. I would be a liar if I said I was 100% out of my own mind. I was already looking for him to call me.
And she holds up her cell phone.
I was wondering how he was doing today, you know, and how he looked, really.
Black screen. Competency is written on it.
He calls me all the time.
A producer asks, can you share?
He's just like, you know, hi, how are you? I say, I'm good. What are you doing today? Where are you, Tom? You know, I'm good. I'm just, you know, at the law practice. It's good.
So here she is during his competency hearing while she's filming this documentary, tripling down on this man doesn't know where he is, doesn't know what's going on. He thinks he's practicing law. He calls me and then he'll call back 2 minutes later and ask me the exact same questions.
As far as he's concerned, he's practicing law. He's not in a memory care facility. And he's not with all these legal problems. And then he'll call me 2 seconds later and we'll have the same conversation.
Then they show a bunch of news clips reporting on the competency hearing and talking about his defense's statement that his cognitive decline began back when he got into that car accident that he did not report to the police to anyone's knowledge. So it's really just his word and Erica's word, unless they've got some sort of, I don't know, from the car, finding the car. I don't know what evidence they have to prove it, but I'm sure we'll see it in court at some point. The news reiterates what his defense is saying, which is that he has mild to moderate dementia.
It's all traumatic, you know, and it keeps the pain alive. Who he is now, who he once was. I was married to this man. He was different from who he is now. And the repeated phone calls, they take me back to many places. I'm trying to be patient and kind for whatever reason, you know, God only knows, because he effed me up. I'm trying to remain somewhat civil to this person that was good to me until he wasn't. And then continue with my life ahead.
And I believe they ask her how she feels watching all this.
And I feel sad and I feel mad and I feel helpless. And like, I tried and no one would listen.
Mikey interrupts, and I'm sure he's overheard the subject matter, because he's like, that's something you do not need to worry about. Focus on Blonde. And Erica had said that she felt like she was being nice and kind to Tom by answering the phone when he would call her. And to me, it's the least that she could do. She's legally still his wife. If she truly believes that this man has cognitive decline and she's rolled out during that moment of need, then yeah, answering the phone is the least you can do. The show she's trying to recreate right now was all paid for by Tom/victims. I don't know if anybody will ever be able to figure out what Tom's income and means of living should have been if not for dipping into client funds. But I would be surprised if an attorney, even, you know, the founding attorney of a law firm that big, could have floated the kind of money that she was spending, really, that Mikey was spending. Between multiple video productions, you know, spending $500,000 a year almost at Marco Marco for just the costumes, the private jet, the fuel, all of that, the hours and time that you have to pay your backup dancers, your backup singers, flying all of those human bodies to Greece, to other places, to shows all around the country, paying their food, I'm sure, their drinks, their hair, their makeup, their outfits. So to me, the insult to injury of this show is that I don't think that this show could have been legitimately paid for by Tom. I look forward to learning more about his financial situation, you know, when it's all coming out in court. But this seems like so tone deaf to try to recreate this persona that only existed because of his negligent spending and theft, in my opinion. If the character or persona was named honestly, it would be like callous, aloof Erica Jane. It's like, you want to bring that back? You don't want to evolve into something better? You want to go throw money around on a stage again and talk about how many Fs you don't give and how expensive it is to be you? That's gone. But they can't let it go. I don't think they know how to operate outside of this foolishness. So Mikey is looking at a video of Erica Jane on that bed, painkiller, whatever, on the big screen, and he's getting wistful, all right? He's like, I think it's the life trauma that just, you know, it effed it all up. She was a free spirit here. She was a free bird. This was her specialty, like so hot. Like I didn't even have to give her a thing. Once again, they're looking at footage from 10 years ago when this woman thought that she was untouchable. Her husband was untouchable and she could spend whatever she ever wanted to spend. So yeah, she might seem a little bit more carefree there, Mikey. Meanwhile, backstage, Erica is having a wardrobe malfunction. The zipper on her bodysuit has torn at the corset, and she can't switch her outfits fast enough to get on stage between two different numbers. And let's all say it together, Marco would never. So finally, when she's ready, she gets wheeled out on the circular bed, and here's the big, stressful, pretend your coach is being eaten out number. Can she pull it off? The stakes are high. Even as she's being wheeled out, Mikey is already yelling into the microphone, less proppy, more acting, act it out. Erica Jane thrusts her crotch into the sky with all her might, rolls her head around. Bang, ba ba bang, ba bang, ba bang, bang, ba ba bang, ba ba bang, ba bang, ba bang, bang. Going off in the background. Mikey looks displeased. Erica Jane thrusts and rolls and thrusts. Mikey closes his eyes, turns his head, and lightly touches his brow. The number ends. The lights go down. Mikey yells into the microphone, go, 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 blackout. You're still sexy. Stay sexy. We're still watching. He turns to Jamie Ruiz and says, should we cut that number? Jamie earns her paycheck by saying, maybe. The business manager, Alexis, that we forgot was there, yells to everyone, can we have a meeting? Mikey says, okay, what about? The whole show. I mean, yes, I have a million things to do, but yeah, let's talk about the show, but fine, yes. And here's where things get dicey. Alexis says, but I want us to take our mics off because we're not getting this on camera. Oh, you're not? Oh, you're not going to get it on camera when you guys are all going to have a meeting about the show? Are you getting paid to do this documentary about the show from Bravo? I think the answer is yes. So this meeting should be on camera. Alexis turns to the camera and she says, we're not going to film this right now. I need to talk to them in private. But the producer is not going to give up that easily. And the producer says, I'll just not use it. But Alexis pushes back and she says, no, sorry, it's not possible right now. While this drama is unfolding over by Mikey's critique table, Erica is still on stage waiting for her next instruction. She's just sitting back. She can't hear any of this. She's just watching a kerfluffle happen. And her assistant, Leah, walks over to her and says, there's donuts. Would you like a donut right now?
Yeah, that'd be nice, actually.
So as everybody is shuffling away to go have some private meeting where they're no doubt going to talk about her and her lackluster thrusting, she's sitting on stage by herself eating a donut.
Where'd everybody go?
The producer is still in it, still fighting to get us this footage. And the producer asks, but what is the sensitive information? Yes, fight.
I need to discuss personal problems that we are experiencing and you guys are not going to capture it. They cannot be mic'd for this conversation. I'm sorry.
But if it shows stuff, like if there are genuine conflicts that are happening,
it's not even a conflict. We need to be able to speak freely. So this is not going to be filmed.
How dare. How dare this woman tell the producers of the show, the people who are charged with capturing all of the drama and fake drama that's happening, that she's deciding that they are not going to be able to listen to them talk about the show? The producer says, okay, that's your decision. I'm just letting you know that it affects the quality of the show that we are doing. And Erica is still on stage eating her donut. Erica turns to her assistant, Leah, and says,
I don't know what we're doing. I thought we were doing notes. Where's everybody else? How come I'm out here all by myself?
Black screen, 24 hours until the show. Finally, the people who scampered off to go have a private meeting, which it seems like it was Jamie, Mikey, Alexis, and I'm not sure who else. But they return to the room. And the vibes are obvious. And Erica is now surrounded by all of her dancers on stage. And she's like,
why do I feel like this is an execution? Do you all feel that too?
Mikey walks up to everybody on stage and says, "One hot pleasure," which is the bed routine that they that he says, "I don't think we can do it." Erica asks why. And he says, "Because no one was killing it, including you. It wasn't hitting, and it's such an important thing."
"Okay, cut it."
"I don't want to."
"You just said you were going to cut it."
"I don't want to cut it, but I don't want to put you in a position for people to go, especially when the video is shown up there and you're working it. So I don't know what to do." I revert back to my original observation, which is that you're setting somebody up for failure. If you're playing footage of them doing a routine from 10 years prior and then having them do that routine on a bed in front of you. So they're really trying to completely recreate this painkiller bed, you know, thrusting routine. And they have the 10 years ago Erica Jane being shown on a gigantic movie screen behind current Erica Jane with two dancers. So they want them all to be in sync and they want them all to be as thrust happy as she was 10 years ago. Not going to happen. And Mikey just keeps rubbing it in. Erica says,
"Well, it's a tough costume change anyway."
But Mikey says, "It's not the costume. It's the performance. It's just not there." We get it, Mikey. You've already said it. You guys scampered off and talked about it. Then you came back and now you've said it several times that her performance is not there. We don't need to say it again. Like, enough. In a confessional, Erica Jane says,
"I'm frustrated. I can't access the part of myself that does this, that loves this. I keep looking. I know it's there somewhere, but it's just not here right now."
So weird. You know, it's almost like maybe it wasn't a great idea to do this. It's almost as if during this precedent-setting legal drama, the answer was not to try to pretend you are an aloof, very wealthy housewife again. A pampered diva without a care in the world. Mikey's still going on. "I love you, but I have to cut it." This is how many times have we said this, Mikey? We've been over this. Mikey tells everyone to get a quick bite and tells Erica, "Let's go chat." In her confessional, Erica says,
"I can't let my friends down, people who've stood by me. It's not the time to self-sabotage."
This time, when Mikey and Erica are sneaking off, the producer asks if he can come too. And Erica says,
"Oh, it's not my decision, honey."
Mikey says, "It's not his decision either." Then whose is it, Erica? Your name is on the show. This entire documentary is named Erica Jane, Bet It All on Blonde. You're a producer on the show, but you're going to throw your hands up? Just such a weird thing. Whose call is it then? You're giving it all to this woman in, I don't know, her 20s, late 20s, Alexis, to tell the producer if he can come in or not? When are you going to grow up and take and make some decisions? You want the money for producing the show, but not the tough decisions? I was very frustrated. This producer has been jerked around several times in the past, I don't know, hour or two. And this is where we got the scene that the entire documentary opened up on, when she's sitting on the carpet with the sweatshirt that says "Dreams So Wet," and Mikey is going off about how there's not enough spark, and he starts crying and saying that something is missing, and Erica's saying she doesn't feel confident. That whole thing, which is how it opened, is where this scene came from. So because the producer wasn't told no, like, he came into the room, which is great. Bring the cameras in. Because look at that. Look what he got out of it for being persistent. That was the opening scene. That was the most dramatic out of everything. What would we have even seen without that? It just would have been just kind of like this weird, funky B-roll. So this big pivotal moment, you know, in we're taking that with a grain of salt, but this big pivotal moment was only sourced because the producer pushed when they went off to go talk secretly again. And Mikey's complaining. He's lamenting this whole process. How this all started with budget issues, these people following us around. Excuse me? Excusez-moi? Record scratch? Feel free to not take the money to have this documented. Why are you complaining about Bravo following you around with cameras? And it's the whole scene where Mikey breaks down crying. Then Alexis, the business manager, gets there and she's, you know, ratcheting it up for Erica, telling her this is everything she's ever wanted. She's never going to get this chance again. And Erica's making her excuses of they haven't had enough time.
I'm aware. I mean, I just put the costumes on for the first time 2 hours ago and there are some challenges and, you know, I'm trying to perform. But the bottom line is that this shit feels, you know, effed up. There's constant changes.
And Mikey's sobbing, saying that the piece is missing. But everybody needs to cheer up because Erica's mom has gotten there and she's waiting by the bar for Erica to come and hang out with her. And remember, it was also her mom's birthday. So as Erica's walking over to find her mom, she mumbles to herself,
well, that was hard to hear.
She hugs her mom and tells her happy birthday. And her mom can tell right away, like, things are not going well. It's tense. Stuff is wrong. And her mom's like, you know, I don't have to be here unless you want me here. And so Erica confides in her, like, you know, we had a meeting just now.
They're telling me I'm holding back.
Her mom says, says who? And don't they know that you bring it when the audience is there?
They want it now.
But you're tired.
I am.
Lots of laughter.
My mom is my biggest fan. She wants me to move on and be successful, and she felt so bad for me, and it's just a comfort to have her here.
Meanwhile, Mikey is just crying in the dressing room, just weeping. He has been weeping since Erica left, it seems, and he's saying to someone, I think Jamie Ruiz is in there with him. He's saying, how do I make this better? He's gasping for breath in his sobs, and he says, I might have to take a walk. Jamie, again earning her paycheck, says, we do it again. I just need her to perform, says Mikey. She's not performing. All this would be fine if she would just perform. Erica says to her mother,
I think I'm mentally tired, not physically tired.
Black screen, 6 hours until the show. Mikey has gathered himself in the next scene and he's feeling more upbeat, more effort. And he says to Erica, this is a club. We've done some shit shows before, and the chatter needs to go away, and we need to have fun.
It's always been you and I, and that's how we got here.
Exactly. I don't know that this is a path that you want to keep going down. It burns so much money. My last word to you is punk rock. Mikey, that's two words. Punk rock. That's it. Not perfect showgirl. I don't care if you drop to your knees and masturbate on stage. Just go for it.
Mikey? Okay.
You and I are done with corrections. It is what it is. Just have fun. That's all anyone wants to see. Now, for the first time, they're doing a full costume run through, with all of the stage effects. So they show Erica rising up from the stage, lights and smoke going off.
I'm a princess. I'm a mistress.
Mikey's yelling into the microphone. Yes! Bend over! Hot! All this is being yelled at her while she's singing her stuff.
Take your time.
Oh, yes. Work the boys. Erica shakes her hips. Mikey continues to yell hype things throughout their rehearsal.
Drama. Yes. Applause. Applause. Oh, we have a show.
Black screen, 65 minutes until showtime. Erica's about to get a B12 shot because Mikey has told her that's going to change her life and give her energy. Everyone is getting their glam, getting their gigantic hair put on, and lots of makeup. Mikey is with the dancers, and he, of course, is deciding what their glam and overall look is going to be. 35 minutes until showtime. It's opening night, so some people are there mingling with drinks and taking their seats. Mikey is hyping up the dancers. They're jumping around. 22 minutes until showtime. The crowd is chanting, Erica! Erica! She's in a sparkly red catsuit that has wings, like red wings, on it. Mikey yells out, 4 minutes to prayer! And of course, Mikey leads the prayer because this is his show.
Love you. Let's have fun. You know, like, you know what you're doing. 1, 2, 3, pretty mouth, pretty mouth.
Black screen, white letters, showtime. Erica, again, goes through the bottom of the stage, comes up and is yelling,
Las Vegas, make some noise.
She sways her hips as she begins to sing,
it's expensive to be me.
Each number that she's performing, her old video of that number, if applicable, is playing behind her. So as current Erica is swaying, we see 8, 9 years ago Erica rolling around and they're both singing Bentleys and Benzes through cash-colored lenses and dollars and senses ka-ching. The crowd was very interesting. A lot of men. They show Erica doing the splits on stage and Mikey yells, Rockstar! Into his microphone. She flings an insane amount of hair all around. How is that hair held on is all I could think. I would like to know the logistics of how you, because the amount of hair that they showed her having as a normal woman is very different from the amount of hair that she has on when it's showtime. And I don't know how that much weight and hair stays on her head when she's whipping her head around on stage. It's got to be more than glue, right? That's where my mind goes. I'm like, how is she holding that hair on? Back to Erica on stage. She's gyrating and she says, "That's just how it be. It's expensive to be me. And I still don't give a fuck." And she gets lifted by two young men into the air. Next song. But again, same intro where she comes rising from the bottom of the stage with the, you know, smoke and lights and whatever. I'm like, okay, we just did this, but okay. Now she's in a gold outfit. And I wonder what happens during the costume changes. Like, what happens when she's not on stage? What are the people seeing? They don't show us that. The next number, Erica is in a cage and she's squatting and flinging her hair around. And at this point, I believe it has to be sewn in. It has to be sewn into the roots of her hair. Third song. And again, she rises from the same spot from the stage with the smoke and the lights. It's never going to get old. They're going to do this, I think, at the beginning of every song. This one is more of a Tron theme. Her outfit and everything is very like day glow neon on black.
I always roll the dice. You wonder what it's like.
There's about 8 to 10 steps from where she rises up through the stage to the floor, the bottom of the stage. And for her to descend those steps, she has dancers on her left and on her right holding her as they very cautiously go down the steps. When she gets to the bottom, they lift her up where she has a leg kicked up and her arms wide. They put her down and she stomps all over the stage.
Drip, 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 like when I hit that lip gloss.
Oh, pardon me. I got the lyrics wrong. It's drip, drop, like when I hit it with that lip gloss. I know that mattered to someone out there. At the end of this song, confetti falls. There's a wind machine that blows to the front of her. She has her hand on her crotch. She stomps, stomps, stomping, drip, drop. She flings her hair again, bends over, flings it back, like when you're blow drying your hair. And then the Erica Jane power pose that we've seen from the very beginning, which is just throwing her fist in the air, like to the power of Grayskull, and throwing that fist up. And that's the end of her number. Then we're into,
how many F's do I give?
And the video behind her is in these cat suits that look like they're made of money. And I just read about those cat suits in the Marco Marco lawsuit and how much those cost to make. And she's not wearing that cat suit while she's singing and dancing to her old self wearing that stuff. And part of me then starts to wonder, can she not wear the old stuff anymore for any reason other than maybe, I mean, she paid for it. It's still hers. So I just don't know why she's not wearing the outfit she already had. Because she's working with somebody new now on all new costumes. But this is her last number, or the last one they show on this anyway. I mean, they're not going to show all 80 minutes, you know, on this show. So these are the highlights, the ones that we get to see. And so she's stomping around and she's like,
thank you, Las Vegas. How many F's do I give? Never, zero, not one.
And that's the end of the show. When it's over, Alexis runs, sprints into the dressing room, screaming, crying. Everyone hugs Erica. And Alexis says, that was the best thing that's ever happened in Vegas. I swear on my effing life. Erica kisses her on the forehead.
I love you. Thank you.
Ponytail Man, the man that redid all of the music, he's there. He walks in and gives her a hug. Then we see a woman come in, and at the bottom of the screen, it says Erica's lawyer, Dina LaPolt, LaPolt. And I'm like, what happened to B for Borges? He didn't come to it. How many lawyers does she have? Probably a lot. Her lawyer, Dina, says, so fucking good. Mikey runs in and hugs her. He's crying. The backup dancers and singers are crying. Mikey yells to everyone, guys, we effing did it. Triumphant. Black screen. 12 hours later, Erica talking to the camera.
Yesterday morning, I was so depressed. I was like, let me look up some TED Talks. I looked up how to get into the flow state.
And she goes on and on about how she got into her flow state, and that's why the show was good. And that at the end of the show, she realized how many people really felt for her during the hard time over the past 3 years because people were crying for her. So, you know, Mikey, her backup dancers, everybody that's on her payroll was weeping for her and how she took it all in.
I still haven't cried. No, I mean, I cried a little bit on stage, but, you know, to have that people were pulling for you and realizing I wasn't alone. It's here. We did it. I was just really, you know, there were so many people that were really rooting for me. I just hope I made them happy because I was happy for once in a very long time.
Then they start throwing summary slides up. You know, there's a still of Erica Jayne doing her power pose on stage. And it says that Bet It All on Blonde opened to rave reviews and was a commercial success. Then there's a picture of Tom walking into the courtroom, and it says Tom was declared competent to stand trial by a federal judge on January 2nd, 2024. Then a picture of Tiago, her dog, saying that Tiago passed away 1 month after the opening night of the residency in Las Vegas. And the photo of Tiago, like, I couldn't even really feel bad. I felt really sad for Tiago for a moment. But the photo that they used of him is one where Erica has, you know, stretched the photo. You know how you can take it with almost a fisheye lens. And so she's just in a bra and Louboutins. And he's sitting, the dog is sitting in such a way that he's like covering her crotch area. And so it's just like, you can't even just get a normal picture of the dog. It's like this sexualized, stretched out, distorted, lascivious photo of Erica, but the dog's also there. Then they have a guitar song playing. It's upbeat, but pensive. And they show random photos of Erica and Leah, Erica and Mikey, her whole crew. They did it. And you know what else? We did it. We made it through that. It wasn't easy, but I believed in us. Now, I wanted to know, I get that Bravo will tell us anything, and Erica will tell us anything. So that closing slide of saying it was critically acclaimed, it was very successful, I'm like, what do the people think? And I researched this, and I had a really hard time finding anywhere where people were actually giving what they thought. Everything I saw was a puff piece announcing that she was going to have a residency, but I didn't see any publication covering an actual true critique of the show. So I did what anybody does when they want to know what the hell's really going on. I went to Reddit. Now on Reddit, people who actually paid to go to the show posted clips of their experience, of what it looked like from when they were in the audience. And I love that. That's what I do when I go to BravoCon. Like, if you can't be there, here, watch this and you get to see what I saw. We love a POV. So I'm looking at that. And I learned from watching this and from hearing from people who actually went that there are multiple breaks during that 80-minute show. And because she doesn't have enough music to span that long of a show, she's got several cover songs. She does Madonna, Kool and the Gang's Ladies Night, and Bruno Mars's Leave the Door Open, I guess. Now, Reddit can be a brutal place. Like, that's where brutal honesty goes to thrive. People definitely get too mean on Reddit, but there's always like a little string of something, some message that they're trying to get through. So one fan says that you can hear her breathing very heavily, you know, at points, but they also say that she's not moving around that much, that the choreography isn't there, that she's mostly just standing around. I also learned that people are saying that her first night, the night that they showed on the documentary, that she did not sell out. And that when her tickets first went on sale, they were somewhere between $94 and $194, which included taxes and fees. But it didn't include the price to park your car at Mandalay Bay, which is an additional $15 to $23. And since the auditorium had not been able to sell out, the tickets pretty quickly dropped down to as low as $7 to attend. We heard many times on Real Housewives that her tickets were $7. Now, some of the comments on the Reddit page are so funny to me that I had to like take a break after I read a few of them, but they're too snarky. I can't even say them here. I won't even say them here. You know what I'm saying? I can't do it. But I'll give you some of the tamer ones, which is that it seems like it's a low energy show, that it's a talent show is what one person said. The main critique is that the choreography was just not there with what you'd expect to see going to a Vegas show, and that she seems to be at her limit with what she can do with that pretty low-end choreography. And we watched Erica Jayne go on Dancing with the Stars, and she did not do well there. So I think there's certain things that she can do, you know, swaying and put her fist in the air in front of a wind machine, that it's a bit more smoke and mirrors than it is true dance ability. People also seem to cringe at some of the overly sexualized moves. One person said, her pushing her crotch in the face of the other women in red, that's some really weird creative actions to take. That's feedback right to Mikey. Another person said, how can someone be simultaneously dancing and looking like a statue at the same time? That takes some messed up talent. And even the people who are trying to be positive still have some constructive feedback. Like one person says, I think she looks great, exclamation point. She needs to keep up with the choreography, though. Then we have a VPR comparison. Someone says, how is this worse than Sandoval and his karaoke cover band? She's been doing this a long time. She's put a lot of money into it. I would expect this more from an early tour rehearsal than a live show. Okay, I just read one that made me cough for like 30 seconds afterwards. She should try giving more fucks because this is not it. Then a person commented on that and said, we actually need more FU energy, not zero F energy. All right, I just watched a little bit more of the clip. She does a rendition of Material Girl, Madonna's Material Girl. Of course she does. And the singing voice for it sounds so much like my joke voice. I'm going to play it for you. Hold on. And if you'd like more of that, you can go to the Real Housewives page on Reddit. And the thread is called, boop, 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 Bet It All on Blonde Opening Night. Oh, that was from Opening Night. That was from Opening Night. The documentary didn't really show us her singing that much. They showed her like coming out of the top of the stage, like these chosen little clips, but they didn't really show us the meat of any of the songs or any of the cover songs. They probably couldn't. But now that I'm sitting here looking back at the documentary and seeing the footage that other people posted just online, it is weird that we never saw her like doing her vocals or warming up or that, you know, usually when you watch somebody, you think of all of the music focused documentaries you've seen, whether it's, you know, Miss Americana, Taylor Swift, or Katy Perry, whatever hers was called, I can't remember. Everybody's had them, right? 5'2", Lady Gaga's, and singing and vocals is such a big part of it. How they warm their voice up. Are they resting their voice? What are they eating? Like what supplements they have to, all this stuff. It's just like this care and love of their instrument, which for them is their voice. But for Erica, this entire focus seems to have been on choreography, really primarily choreography, outfits, and then they didn't show us much singing. I don't remember any singing, really. The only music-focused piece was when we went to that guy with the ponytail studio, and he told her that he had remixed some songs. I can't see this Erica Jane performance endeavor being something that lasts for so many reasons. One, it didn't make money when it had real money behind it. So how is it going to make money now? When the Girardi name wasn't Mud, she wasn't making a ton of money off of this or even enough money to sustain a life. And there was no scandal. People talked about her lackluster performances and that she would shave songs off when she went to pride parades and all this kind of stuff, that she wasn't friendly. She didn't go the extra mile for the pride parade organizers. Nothing. It was the bare bones, if anything, cut a little wherever you can cut it and then roll out. What's the real option is what I ask. I mean, I really think she thought she was had a lot going with getting this Vegas, you know, in quotes, residency at House of Blues. That's a short-term situation. If you look at Sonia or Countess Luann, or I think, you know, now it's all fallen apart, but Vicky, Tamra, and Shannon were trying to put together a touring situation. That seems to be the steady income option for a lot of Bravo celebrities, to have your own team book venues and you travel around and you go to where the fans are. And Erica used to do that on Tom's Dime. I don't know how consistent it was, but she would go to these random venues and do a show and come back. But she doesn't have the private jet anymore. So I don't know. I don't know where this is going. I don't know what the overall plan is for this. I just hope we don't have any more documentaries on Bravo about it. I don't want to do any more of it. I don't. I get it. I get what they're about. I could close my mind and ChatGPT of my brain could type out an entire dialogue between Mikey, Erica, Alexis, Leah, Jamie Ruiz, backup dancers. Like, I got it. I understand. I'm good.
But I would be shocked if she gets another residency or if she's booked somewhere and she's not the one who has to hustle and find her own venues, as she should, right? That's like a rite of passage. I don't think she ever had to do any of those things, though. Tom gave her this sort of like, you get to just go to Easy Street situation. There's one review that I read, and it was from some guy named Bob. That's the name he's giving us online anyway. And Bob says, they were giving free tickets to her show, and I had nothing to do, so I went, ... What a disappointment. I left after 15 minutes. The room was not even a quarter full. What a waste. I don't know why she's trying to make fetch happen. I don't know why she's trying to do this other than ego. Because Erica Jane, that entire persona, seems perfect for OnlyFans. Look at Larsa. Look at even Leah now. Persona non grata Leah. These women are making a ton of money, tens and tens of thousands of dollars a month. And Erica Jane, Erica Girardi even, is dying to make everything as sexual as possible at any given moment. Okay, so go do that on OnlyFans and at least get a couple bucks per person. You'll be rolling in cash. At least it'll be legitimate this time. And it's kind of like what she used to do on Instagram, where she would have these booty pics and bra pics and be putting her hand on her butt and stretching the lens out to make her look taller or whatever. Like, go for it. That's what OnlyFans is for, right? Go ahead. Give Larsa a run for her money. I would rather do an OnlyFans than be indebted to some dude in Florida, and he's recently arrested for, like, I think it was assault and battery with a weapon with his wife and that whole drama. Just do the OnlyFans at that point and pay your own bills. Anyway, that's my pitch to her. That's where I see it going. I don't see how else she's going to make money. She doesn't have a product that she sells. She tried to do the hair. She tried extensions. She tried to do some other stuff that flopped. Erica Jane was a fun persona on the show, but it was never a huge money-making thing. So what else is there, really? I'm sure at some point, you know, she'll write a book, but that's hard work. And who's going to pay her for it? And what will the advance be? Will it be enough to sustain her? So I'm sure a book will come at some point, though. But watch that documentary, the whole thing, part one and two. I mean, I get what she was trying to do, right? Reinforce that Tom has cognitive decline. Talk about herself, make us feel sorry for her, emotional about her, her life, her dog, and what she's gone through. The challenges and the hard road to Vegas and her talent for singing and dancing and her lifelong dreams. But in reality, my takeaway was that there's a lot of delusion, a lot of delulu, an abundance of a delulu. And I used to watch American Idol in its early days, and I used to feel so sad for the people that Simon Cowell was mean to at the same time. Some of those people really needed to hear that. Some of the people that came on American Idol and were just belting and they were off pitch and it was not good and there was no talent there, truly believed when they heard it in their ears through their skull, they heard something really good. Or someone told them that it was good and they believed them. And Simon was not a blow smoke person. He would lay down the hammer. He'd be like, you're terrible. You shouldn't do this for a living. Do anything else. You're just not good enough. He would really just lay it down for you and stop it right there. Be like, no, it's not going to get better. Go do something else. And I think Erica could benefit from someone talking to her like that right now. Saying like, look, you had fun. It was cool when you were doing it and you had not a care in the world. And that was a fun persona. We got to let this go now. It's not good for you to do as an endeavor anymore. It's not good to put out into the world anymore. You got to do something else. I don't think she has anybody in her life that would say that to her at all. People came running in crying after opening night that did not sell out. And we just read a ton of reviews about it. She has nothing but a crew of yes people around her. And Bravo will air it as long as people will watch it. And I am curious about the ratings of her show. I didn't see anything about that. I need to find out. I don't think it was good. And if there's a takeaway, it's that nobody knows what they're doing. Everybody's trying to be happy. I think it's good for people to be a little bit delusional, you know, to try to achieve your dreams. And I'm so in support, especially of women, of trying to do something original and trying to get out there and be creative. This just wasn't that to me. This was something else. This was like them trying to reclaim something that's long gone. This wasn't me seeing a tortured artist who's desperate to write songs and, you know, choreograph. Like, she's just doing what other people are having her do. She doesn't have some unique viewpoint that she feels is valuable to share with the world. It more reminds me of that teenage mentality of you think fame is something great just for fame's sake. You hear that somebody is important just because the world says that they're important, so you want to be important too. And I'm sure that has to do with whatever, her upbringing, her issues with Tom, power struggles and dynamics in their relationship, wanting something of her own. And for the record, when Erica Jayne first came on the scene, I was enamored. I thought she was stunning and different and so interesting. And I loved the idea of this woman having kind of been on the straight and narrow with her husband, saying, hey, I've got this really different side of myself. I want to explore it. And here's what I want to do musically. And he supported her completely. I thought it was the coolest thing. I was like, well, you know, I really don't like that she's throwing money around. Like, that whole thing seems so distasteful to me. But I was like, go with it. You know, that's the persona. That's the character, baby. That's the alter ego. I'm sure she's probably quite frugal in her normal life, but like, this is the Erica Jayne character. But then the more you get to know her, and then the whole scandal breaks, and you see how they really did spend money like that, it sours all of that. They're like, there really was no alter ego. Like, you were just really operating in the world like that. DSLs in the Lambo. And then she starts to sort of harness that same cocky, ridiculous persona on Housewives, acting like Erica Jayne, the character, would. And so it's all gone sideways to me. It's all gone sideways. The ground's gone sour. And we got to stop pushing Erica Jayne. We got to let it go. I don't think it does her any favors anymore, and nor the world. So for now, and maybe hopefully for always, farewell, Erica Jayne. I wish I could say it was a pleasure. But if anything, it was a test of endurance and resiliency. And those are always good for us. There were definitely a few times where I was screaming in my head, be over! Be over! I can't watch this anymore! So thanks, I guess. Next pod will drop on Monday. Not sure what that's going to be about. So many options these days. But in the interim, please like, subscribe to this pod, and tell a friend to tell a friend. But whatever you do, don't be like Alexis. When you, earlier in the day, had a private meeting unmiked because the show was so bad that you didn't want to bring immediate shame upon your client because the candid commentary that you needed to have would be too much for them to bear and not something you want on camera. Don't try to blow smoke a few hours later, run in there crying, and swear to that same client that what they just did on stage was the best thing that has ever happened in Las Vegas. Because that's an opinion that can't be trusted.